CliffCentral.com. Gareth Leanne Ben Nolo. No Sia today.
No Sia. Have you heard from him yet?
No, not a peep. I'm a little worried. I keep checking my phone.
Sia is missing like Madeleine McCann, really. So.
The search for Sia would never last that long.
No. He'd make himself found, or else you'd know for sure he was gone.
Yeah.
Sia was gone. Sia was last seen in a Portuguese themed nightclub. And,
right. Is that where he was last? Okay, like Madeleine. That's why you're worried. All right, so lots of stuff to get into today. I just want to address, like, one of our listeners sent me a message quickly. This is from Luca. And Luca says, knowing your viewpoint about racism in our country, it's best when they show themselves publicly rather than having them hide in the dark. I thought I'd share this with you guys. A video of a guy showed up on my timeline today, basically a selfie video of him driving, ranting about the service he received at a Pick and Pay, and how he thinks the staff need to smile more and be more polite and happy to serve him his jam donuts. So I commented that the attitude is likely a result of their life situation. See the screenshot below of the ugly reply I got from some juice head. Not the guy who made the video. For context, it's not clear my profile picture is of my girlfriend and I. Her dad's side of the family is Durban Indian. So, Luca, I don't know whether... maybe you're white. I think that's what you're trying to say. And your girlfriend is Indian. And this juice head says, Luca, it looks to me you're more into curry than anything else. Boy, know your place.
Oh.
All right, so... There are a number of ways we can tackle this, and I do want to deal with it because I think, Luca, you're probably a thoughtful guy, which is why you sent this to me, and I saw you tweeted it as well. So first of all, we all oppose racism, but there isn't really a way to fight it, you see. I mean, you can out racists, but you're not going to change the way they think. And sometimes to react to it is to let them win. Sometimes it's better to not even let it stop you. You and your girlfriend seem... by all intents and purposes, and certainly by the little profile picture I saw, seem to be very happy people. You're living a great life. You're having fun. Maybe you're both into curry. Who the hell knows? But that's a racist comment from him, and why should it bother you or stop you in your tracks?
Yeah, don't feed the trolls.
You know what, Luca? MoveOn.org. Racism is going to be everywhere. It's not the worst thing about humanity. Humans have been genocidal. They've been very, very dangerous. They've treated each other like possessions in history. This is just a, he's a loser, and don't worry about him. All I can say to you is just move on, dude.
It reminds me of a comment I saw on a brand that said happy holidays in their post.
Mm-hmm.
And the commentator,
the
person, yes, thank you.
Don't worry, we'll get there.
Says,
Monday, we're all a bit scratched.
Yeah. Said in South Africa, it's not happy holidays. Why does everything have to be so American? In South Africa, it's Merry Christmas.
Oh, God. All right. Here we go.
And it's like, well, not everyone in South Africa is Christian. Hello. Is that what you're presuming?
Why do you want everyone to be like you? They're not going to be like you. Just move on. You wouldn't have listened to this person if they were standing on the side of the street on a box. Would you?
No.
This dude who commented on Luca's status or Luca's comment, looks to me like you're more into curry than anything else. Boy, know your place. I mean, he's provoking you. Now, the male ego part of you wants to retaliate and teach this idiot a lesson. But I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. I'm telling you, you're never going to meet this guy. You wouldn't recognize him if he walked past you in the shops.
Don't give him the satisfaction.
Leave it.
He's looking for you. He's looking for something.
I have to deal with people. The other day, someone said to me, they met somebody. And somehow my name came up. And this other dude said to this person I know, oh, that Gareth Cliff, he's such bad news. He's so opinionated. So arrogant. Now, I don't know who this guy is. Part of me immediately goes, oh, you're a piece of shit. You don't even know me. And then I go, and I realize I don't know who he is. I don't have to care who he is. Luca, do the same. Move on. I wish you and your girlfriend luck. Don't let a douchebag like this spoil your day.
Yeah.
Even if he's a racist. So what? So what?
Just leave it.
It's
stoppist.
I want to start a website called whocares.org. Just who cares? Yeah. I'll get Melania Trump to front it with that nice jacket of hers.
Yes. Yeah,
that says who cares. All right, so there we go. Luca, I hope we've dealt with that from our point of view. All we can offer you is our opinion. If you don't like what we've said, then do whatever you're going to do.
Who are we anyway?
Right.
Right. Well, yeah, we're not racists. I will say that much.
Yeah.
That's who we are.
Michelle says, interestingly enough, Tumi Morake, who was on the other day, has a good way of explaining our situation in South Africa. We're all holding a poo in, and sometimes we fart, but eventually there's going to be a shit. So, yes, good point, Michelle. All right, there are a few things that Leanne has on the table for us this morning. Everybody's worried about their carbon footprint, but your water footprint is as important. You haven't thought about this yet, have you? It's because you're irresponsible.
Yeah, invisible to most, water is in everything that we eat, wear, and use.
Yes.
It's in the growing of the crops, the mining of the metals, the dyeing of the fabric.
Yes.
The production lines, manufacturing our phones.
Yes.
And if you think about it, how much water do you think it takes to make a harmless cotton t-shirt?
7,000 liters.
No, I think that's probably a bit much.
Oh, sorry, that's a hamburger.
Well, you're not far off, Ben. It's 4,000 liters.
What?
39 bathtubs to make a t-shirt.
Yeah, sitting there with your smug cotton t-shirt telling me I don't know anything.
You think you've made this environmentally friendly choice because you've chosen the natural material.
Oh, no.
It takes all that water to grow, bleach, wash, and dye the cotton. And to make sure that water quality standards are met after using fertilizers, pesticides, and chemicals needed to take cotton from seed to t-shirt.
Oh, I know what's going to happen now. This is going to drive us all crazy.
It is, I know.
Yeah. But I shouldn't have brought this up.
I'm actually wearing a shirt that says responsible cotton.
Are you really?
Yeah. It's got a whole spiel about how the fact that it's responsibly done.
Well,
water.
Look at you virtue signaling.
And the children used to make it were 11, not 8.
Okay.
Let me just rip off the Band-Aid. A phone costs or takes about 13,000 liters or 130 bathtubs to make.
Oh.
Yeah, and the problem is all this water is coming from India, China, Turkey, Egypt, Bangladesh, Mexico, or Brazil.
Hmm.
In these water-scarce and impoverished regions of the world. So we have to think about these things. We have to just know it.
God.
The Band-Aid's off.
Yeah.
So what must we do? Well, there are a lot of companies now, like the top Nordic textile brands, like H&M and IKEA.
Mm-hmm.
They're working with the Sweden Textile Water Initiative.
Well, then they'll definitely get it right. Then the Swedes are so clever.
Yeah. To reduce the footprint of their suppliers. I mean, to consider this, that the total water footprint for the top 10 clothing companies is 2,800 billion liters of water a year.
What?
That's over a million Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Oh, my God. All right.
The Americans are mostly to blame, not even China. China's using a quarter of what America does
mm-hmm.
in manufacturing. So all that we need to do, really, is make sure that we're buying from brands who take caring for water seriously. So you can look at what companies are doing to use water sustainably along their value chain by reading water disclosure statements. That's what companies should have a lot of. And buying less stuff.
Yes.
We buy a lot of stuff that we don't need.
We don't need all of it, right?
No.
Okay. All right, I'll try.
So it's not all...
We're going into Black Friday. I've got to buy stuff.
Yeah.
Are you also getting the Black Friday ads?
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
In your email? There's just a ton of them in
mine. But look, there are some really good specials.
All right.
Are they
half price? Yeah.
Like half price of something
you're giving
don't
us
want.
Mixed signals here. You're telling me on one hand I mustn't buy more stuff, and then you're telling
saying,
me there's
well,
great
there's some
deals.
Good specials.
Terrible.
Buy water. We need it.
All right.
Wow, stock up.
I'm really excited about this lawn furniture. I'm just still getting a lawn, but I want to buy the furniture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. All right. Well, I mean, that's a horrible thing to deal with. But Ben, as much as Luca's dealing with racism, there's also racism in animals.
Well, allegedly, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically a disgruntled or irate person in England has called the cops because they have said that their racist neighbor dog took a shit on their doorstep, and it was purely because of a race-themed attack that the dog did this.
the
so they're dog? Saying not only the neighbor's racist, but the dog's racist too.
Yes, so basically this dog came out, and of all the places to take a shit in the entire world, on their doorstep, and they said this is a race, it's a race attack. Basically,
a race attack.
This is a race attack.
Okay.
To which the police issued a statement that, seriously, this is an actual police statement after this racist attack where this dog shat on this guy's doorstep. Said, this is part of the reason that police struggle to investigate serious offenses such as home burglaries. Mm-hmm. People need to start thinking more carefully before they call the police. An actual, just imagine that. You see a dog. Okay, sure. I mean, you don't want the dog cucking on your doorstep. Yeah. But to then take it so far to actually call the police and say, this is a racial incident, this dog has targeted me because of my race.
No. I mean, I was just thinking about it logically and thinking, can dogs be racist? And you do get the situations where a white person's dog will bark at black people and a black person's dog will bark at white people.
Yeah, you get that. That happens.
Sure.
So maybe they can be racist. Who knows?
Yeah, but even if they are you going to, what are you going to do with a dog that's racist? Go send it to a re-education camp? I mean, come on.
Well, let's go work for H&M. Go when to those seminars they have.
When are we going to be comfortable with the differences between each other and embrace these things rather than find them as reasons to hate each other and to divide? Why have we not crossed that bridge? We've come out of the trees. We've managed to use tools. We've managed to build incredible technology. But we still haven't managed to find out how our differences can be a strength rather than a weakness. You've got to be kidding me. When are we going to give up that last little bit of the reptile brain that is tribalism? When are we going to stop that and stop worrying about what everybody says all the time? When are we going to get past that? Hmm. I would love to know. That's when we can say, all right, it's worth being human.
Well, this is a big thing in England, actually. These non-crimes that get sort of committed or get reported. Up to 2,500 alleged hate crimes. This is just the hate crimes. Are reported to the police where they say this is a waste of our time.
It's because people realize that not everybody likes them. Yeah. And then their day goes badly and they make it the police's problem. You know, well, not everyone likes you. Do you know that? Do you know that? I mean, Luca showed us something he had on Facebook to deal with today. I told you that story of that dude I don't know who hates me for no good reason. Mm. There are people, Leanne, who don't like you, and you're fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Ben, there are people who don't like you. Nolo, did you know that there are people somewhere in South Africa who right now don't like you? Do you know that? It's entirely possible, right? Probably even someone you met this weekend.
That's normal, and I mean, I'm not meant to be everyone's cup of tea, and that's
right.
Okay.
Right, exactly.
So if they dislike you because you're a woman or a man or you're black or you're white or you're this or you're that, so what? They don't like you. They don't have the benefit of knowing you.
Yeah.
Just wrapping up on this, here are some other incidents that the police have been troubled with.
Yes.
An envelope that had been opened and then resealed got called into the cops. A road accident involving a car bearing a remembrance poppy. A disputed call by a line judge in a tennis match. Cops were called. And someone found a dead rat in their garden that called the cops.
Oh, my word.
Because they thought it was a hate crime.
Yeah.
If I found a spider in my house and no one from my family or friends answered their phones, I might call the cops, actually. That's all I had.
What, for an intruder?
Yeah. No,
it's a spider in my garden. All right, very good.
It's all about thinking too deeply about things. That's...
Well, yeah. Just it's having a head up your ass.
It's also just a lack of exercise, let's be honest. The person whose dog, his doorstep got fouled upon, that person who wasn't running a 5K that day, there's no exercise involved here.
No, but if someone does the 94.7, they're going to tell you. I had so many people posting all kinds of shit about how they were on their bicycle, like they were some kind of hero this weekend. I told you, Anthea was raising money for the Early Care Foundation, so I get that. And she doesn't do this every year. And it must have been her own personal trial in some way. And maybe for everybody who does these things, it's your own feeling of accomplishment. Great. I'm not going to take that away from you. And who the hell am I to comment if I'm going to be a lazy piece of shit and lie in bed until 10? The fact is, though, it's like the comrades. The person who wins is the winner. And then the race is kind of over. The rest of you should go home.
The rest is losers.
Sorry, you are a loser. Unless you won the thing, you're a loser. People don't like to hear that. And if you're on your own personal journey and personal mission and you want to accomplish something, great. Loads of my friends did. Don't expect me to jump up and down and clap my hands. I'm not impressed. If you win it, sure, I'll be impressed. I'll tell everyone, hey, Leanne, my friend, she won the 94.7.
Yes.
Watch me get excited.
Not she rode it.
No, she won it. Participation trophy for everybody. Ooh. Well done to you.
My dad was on his normal cycle route the 1 year. Uh-huh. He cycles every day of his life. And he was a professional cyclist.
Yes.
And he had completely forgotten about the 94.7. He doesn't do races like that. I mean, he competed in the World Champs. And he by mistake, joined the path of cyclists, and he found himself in the race. So he finished it, and he got a medal. He came home from his normal training session with a medal. Look what I got.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's called stolen valor. That's
yeah,
what that is.
Absolutely.
All right, well, here's an interesting story. This is the first person to run a marathon without talking about it. Listen to this.
She never mentioned anything, but I started to notice a pattern. 6 runs a week, a long run every weekend.
Eventually, this is her husband.
She was going to be the first person to run a marathon without telling anyone about it.
How's that, huh?
For years, running a marathon without telling anyone was actually thought to be physically impossible, with even the most private runners giving in to Facebook posts, Instagrammed sneakers, and self-congratulatory tweets anytime they ran in the rain. But Kim's incredible endurance and willpower left a mark on everyone who saw her.
She had something special I had never seen before in a marathoner. Modesty.
I posted 12 photos of me watching her run the marathon. How did she do it? I'll never know.
The statistics are incredible. 15 weeks of training and never once did she utter the phrase carbo loading. I just said it, and I've only run a 5K, although I am in training for 10K later this fall.
Despite multiple requests, Kim refused to be interviewed for this program, saying, "Why would I have talked about something that's not interesting to anyone else?" But many of her fans still can't let it go.
It almost seemed like she enjoyed running for its own sake. I mean, what? What? The whole point of running a marathon is being able to tell people that you've run a marathon. Otherwise, just go for a long run.
And the impact of Kim's run still resonates, with fans continuing to visit the site of that momentous day.
This is where it all went down. The finish line was right over there. You could imagine the crowd roaring, the runners high. And she got in her car and she drove away. Sorry. Unexpectedly emotional. Just gonna put it on Twitter and Instagram, maybe Facebook, and Snapchat it to a few people. And email my college roommate. Everyone's gotta see this.
There it is, the first woman to ever run a marathon and not tell anybody about it. Huh. And look at how famous she is as a result. It's incredible. All right, let's turn our attention to sober things like meditation.
Yes, a very powerful mental tool. But
I've always been like really keen to learn how to meditate, but I've never been able to crack it.
Just
I think
another time, Gareth.
It's really not that difficult.
I know people say that, but it's about quieting your mind. It's about focusing.
Mindfulness.
Yeah, but what hashtags do you use? Just
hashtag mindfulness.
Just mindfulness.
Hashtag
that's the latest one.
Okay.
It has to be mindful meditation.
I listen to Sam Harris sometimes. He's a big thinker and public intellectual. Lives in the States. Does a great podcast. Listen to him, and he talks a lot about meditation. In fact, he's developed an app to help you meditate. I haven't tried it yet, but I will.
Yeah.
And then there's a guy like Yuval Noah Harari, who's written all these brilliant books over the last 3 years, which I've been a massive advocate of. He meditates for 2 hours a day to clear his mind, to be able to write with such lucidity. And I'm blown away by that. There must be some value to this. Therefore, I'm curious about it.
Yes. Well, for a lot of people, it's going terribly wrong.
Why?
It's all about thinking too deeply about things, really. And getting yourself into such a frazzlement where you're so woke, hashtag woke is another.
Mindful woke.
Yeah. That you get in over, you get your titties in a tangle.
About stupid stuff.
Yeah.
That you shouldn't be applying your mind that importantly to.
The story
is
contributed to by a man who ended up in hospital with a massive panic attack because he, for 6 days, got about 6 hours of sleep because he was thinking so much about his life. Even though his life was pretty normal, he had chest tension, nausea, ended up in the emergency room. And what it caused it was his meditation practice.
Oh?
He started last year.
His meditation got him into hospital.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
He started meditating last year. He started losing interest in life a little bit because of so much perspective. He stopped playing guitar, stopped listening
so
to music.
Oh, I got so much perspective.
Yeah. There are actually support groups for this sort of thing. There's a support group called or run by Willoughby Britton, who's the director of a clinical and neuroscience lab at Brown University. And each week she gets emails from hundreds of people who are struggling, asking for help, casualties of meditation.
That's unreal. So even something that you would think was just good, that can't have any positive, any negative consequences. I mean, meditation. Yeah. Turns out that can be bad for you.
So what it comes down to is this hyper arousal.
Uh-oh.
So it increases in anxiety, fear, panic, insomnia, trauma flashbacks, emotional instability.
Mm-hmm.
There can even be sensory hypersensitivity.
Oh.
Like sensitivity to light and sound. So you do, you go through this phase where at first everything's pleasant, colors get brighter, you start noticing more things, you hear the birds more, until it eventually just drives you mad.
Well, I also think that there's a part of this that must be true at some fundamental level, because it only really happens to bored, comfortable, rich people.
Yeah.
Poor people don't have time to overanalyze, to go to therapy 3 times a week, to think things through 100 times, to sit quietly and meditate for 20 minutes in the morning. They're busy getting their kids dressed off to school. I'm not saying all poor, but I mean busy people. People who've got a lot of shit going
people
on.
People are trying
life.
To just yeah. focus on surviving.
I mean, no one has time. Yeah, 20 minutes. Honey, I'm just going to wake up quickly in our informal settlement in the north of Johannesburg in some bug-infested hovel, and I'm going to quickly have a 20-minute meditation. Oh, please. Yeah. You're like, I've got to get to work today. I've got to take 3 trains. I've got to take 2 taxis. Then I'm going to be shat on by my boss because I'm 10 minutes late. I'm going to have a day full of backbreaking work. I'll get home when it's dark again. I have to make sure that the children's school fees are paid. Yeah, those people don't have a chance to do meditation. Are you kidding me? So these are spoiled, bored people.
Well, the man who they quoted in this article says, I just felt shattered. I had a job, a wife, 2 beautiful children, and yet I felt that I would never experience joy again. So it's exactly that.
Wah! Wah! Yeah. Go and drown yourself in a
don't
river.
Don't take things so seriously in life, really.
As much as I don't like cycling, I don't like a lot of these things, but go for a run, go for a cycle.
Yeah.
There's measure meditation, because you're getting the exercise out of you. So if you do have any pent-up frustrations, isn't going to kind of do it. That'll work for like maybe 1%. I'm going to go with the fact that getting a good sweat on will do more for you.
All right,
and will keep you healthier.
Life advice from Ben.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ben.
Good you're stuff. Welcome. That's terrific. So we've
I know if I've had a tough day, 5 kilometers puts me right back onto even kilter.
All right. See? And it's not the best thing for your knees, but it gets you thinking. Gets your blood flowing.
It's good for your head.
All right. How about earwax?
That could only go bad as a story.
Let's talk about earwax.
You know, human earwax, it's removed by two means, a curious finger or an ill-advised cotton swab.
Yeah, but I've heard that's bad, but I can't help it. I don't like water in my ears. I use a cotton bud just every time I've been in the shower. I use a cotton bud to just gently kind of get the water
just on the outside. Yeah, they say you should put nothing smaller than an elbow in your ear.
Wow, all right.
But whale earwax, however, is really proving quite valuable in finding out how humans have stressed out whales all their lives and for centuries.
Well, I know we've treated whales very, very badly. You don't have to read Moby Dick to know how brutal and vicious humans have been. And that was supposedly about this whale that was vicious and brutal. But honestly, they're the most placid creatures. They've lived in the oceans for thousands of years until we discovered a way to hunt them.
Yeah.
And now, since then, we've just been shits to them absolutely every moment of the day night.
It all started with whaling.
Yeah.
Then there was the war,
and
which
just
affected
remember,
them.
Just remember, we're more closely related to these whales than we are to half the things that live on the earth, let alone the sea.
Then there was war.
Yeah.
And then climate change. So even though we aren't interacting with them directly, these are all human actions that have been affecting whales.
Right.
So what happens with these, with this earwax? They pull them from dead whales.
Oh.
And a big earwax plug.
Oh.
Can be about 50 centimeters long.
Oh, this is revolting.
And weigh about a kilogram.
Mm-hmm.
But it contains a wealth of information about the environmental conditions the animal lived in, as well as the health of the whale over its lifespan. And also, because wax is added in layers, like tree rings, researchers can get a time series of data on everything from pesticide contamination to reproductive cycles.
Hmm.
But the way that we are finding out how we've had an effect on them is by measuring hormones like cortisol, which is a stress hormone.
Yes.
In the whale's earwax. And that's what's going down at the moment.
And we've been doing a lot to upset these poor animals.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're just such peaceful creatures.
Hunting them to the verge of extinction.
Killer whales.
You know that they would have totally been wiped out if we hadn't discovered electricity at the time that we did?
Really?
Because their fat was used for street poles and stuff like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, and whale blubber. And various other whale products would burn the best and the longest. And we were on the verge of completely wiping them out. And some species were wiped out.
Yes.
And thank God we discovered other ways to light the night.
Yeah.
And we didn't used to have to burn whale fat like primitive monsters.
And we found lots of chemicals to replace whale fat in soap and cosmetics.
Well, exactly. Poor damn things. I just want to say, because I know they can hear us, because whales have great hearing.
Yes, of course they can.
I just want to say, whales, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry humans are such shits. Oh. Is that roughly the sound?
You're speaking whales.
Pretty much. That's an apologetic sound. They'll appreciate it.
Okay. Ankia says, a friend and I are going on a meditation retreat on the 1st to the 2nd of December at the Nanua Buddhist temple outside Bronkhorstspruit. I'm so excited. I always wanted to learn to meditate.
Well, good for you.
Ankia. Just don't end up in hospital because you're over-meditating.
Yeah.
Usually you go to hospital because you're over-medicating, but over-meditating is a whole new thing.
Yeah.
Anyone want to hear from Rich Mulholland? I do.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to him. Hello, Rich Mulholland.
Top of the morning to you.
How are you?
I was better until I listened to the conversation about large chunks of earwax.
I know, I'm sorry.
I mean, I feel bad for the whales.
Yes.
But damn.
Ew.
Well.
And also, earbuds are the greatest, greatest feeling
I know.
On the planet.
I'm
it's so
you.
Rad. It's going to kill me, but it's so good.
do you make your poor, long suffering wife do things to your ears with earbuds?
No. I wouldn't trust her.
Tell the truth.
It's a very important thing. It's kind of like masturbation. It's you know what you want in it, right? So, in fact, now I can't decide what I want to do after this call. Do I want to go clean my ears or have a wank? Too much? I don't know.
Well, you're sharing. It's that kind of a day.
Well, there we go.
I'm pretty sure if you do both, Rich, it'll be like the next auto asphyxiation. You'll start something incredible.
And if you can sneeze at the same time, you'll have like a full-rounded orgasm.
And you'll be like a celebrity in Scandinavia where this kind of stuff works.
And imagine if we found you dead with an earbud and your hand on your cock and
the belt around your
neck. Snot everywhere.
A belt around your neck and earwax.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear me.
Definitely
somewhere in the world, somebody does this. And what I hate is, like, every time I come on this call, all I hope is to provoke one person into doing one thing differently because of it.
Oh, God.
Now I'm thinking of poor Mike sitting in Santon with his earbuds. He's like, well, you know, he was just about to give one a go. And he's like, well, hey, why not?
All right, let's not give any people bad advice. All right. How was your weekend and what do you have to tell us today?
The weekend was cool. I did one of those TEDx talks, which was quite fun.
Excellent.
I'm absolutely sunburnt, which is ridiculous. I'm an adult. I should know better. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I have to tell you about. So it's kind of the start of a thought. It's actually something I may want to see if it's expandable on to become a talk or something. Mm-hmm. But I listened to this podcast. It's called The Dice Towers About Board Games. And in it, there's this guy called Eric Summerer. Yeah. And often what will happen is he'll pop back in. They'll have recorded the podcast. And then in the middle of it, he'll pop in and he'll say, hey, future Eric here. When we said this, what we actually meant was that. So future Eric has to do quite a lot of work for, you know, current Eric and current Tom, because maybe they didn't. And so yesterday I was going to exercise, to jump rope. And when I went out to get it, the day before I tied my shoelaces in a double knot. And when I finished, I took them off. I just kind of flipped them off. And then future me, present me, had to sit there and untie these laces. Mm-hmm. And I was so pissed off with past me, almost to the point of like I was thinking like it was a different person that did something to me. And it kind of strikes me that I'm technically three different people. I'm me, I'm future me, and I'm past me.
Yes.
And we all exist together. And I think I often do a really, really bad job. Like I throw a hospital pass to future me. Like the amount of times I'll be riding home and my petrol light will go on. And I'll think, I can just do it in the morning. But actually, I'm on my way home from something. The following morning, I'm on my way to something intentionally. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost always in more of a rush the next day than I am on the way home.
Absolutely.
But I'm forever putting it off. And I know it sounds a bit like that cliche that, you know, don't do something, put off something till tomorrow that you could do today. But I think it's more than that, because I think that we don't consider the fact that it's us who have to do things. I also think there's like differences there as well. But I want to become a better curator of the experience that future me has. And since I started thinking about this way, I find that I am more aware of it. So when I finished training yesterday, I sat there and I, you know, untied my laces and I put them down. And in about, you know, 5 minutes when I go and put them on again to train now, present me is going to be very thankful for past me. And I feel like we need to start thinking about this, is we need to start thinking about like future you. And the lens I want to have is that life is actually more like a relay race. It's a team sport, and you're sprinting forward to hand future you the baton to take over. And your job is to be the best you can while sprinting, and that you need to try and be a better teammate to yourself. So that's kind of my starting thought.
I love this. This is the germ of an excellent idea, because if you do start thinking of yourself as three different people, and you start to plan for future you to have a much better life than present you, and for past you to be forgiven all of his misgivings, you will be a much more well-rounded, satisfied, healthy, happy human being who isn't stealing from other people in terms of time and energy and trying to make other people's lives a misery. Instead, you'll be a lot more self-actualized, for want of a better term. I love this, Rich. This is solid gold. If you can do everything you do to make future you happier, then you're living a good life. I think you might have discovered what Socrates talked about and what they put onto the entablature of the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. Know thyself, right? And by know thyself, also, sure, look after thy future self.
Yeah, look after thy future self. Exactly.
But how, like, how do you explain,
simple thing.
How do you reconcile and explain things like going out and drinking? Then you're definitely not doing things for your future self, because your future self's going to hate that.
Also, there's other ways to think about it in terms of saving, like silly things you're buying. At one stage, myself and Grant, who I work with, have thought of creating an app, and it's every time you buy something, you scan it, and it will tell you how much it costs, and then it will tell you how much it would have cost future you if you'd instead invested that money. So if you go and buy yourself a 2,000 rand pair of sneakers, mm-hmm, and then we say, well, instead of buying those sneakers, future you, that 2,000 rand will be worth this much. And then the thought was, you know, you sell this eventually to like an Alan Gray. And the idea is, at the point you're about to decide to buy the shoes or not, you've basically said, I have disposable income. And instead of buying it, you can immediately just invest it in a long-term thing. So the money will become worth the compounded interest of the decision. So you're making far better decisions. You're like getting less shit in your life, and you're making more money for future you. But yeah,
as a part of the evolution of how this might end up as a talk, how do you know when future you is getting too large a slice of the pie And I'm asking that because most of the great philosophers will also tell you to live in the present, right? They'll tell you that if you are not physically and mentally and emotionally and spiritually present when things are going on, you're not really living. Because if you're thinking too much about future you, then your present you is just a slave. And your past you is a problem. And that's no way to live either, right?
For sure. And I think it storms up. Like, if you look at the examples I gave you, present me had a great day. And it was only it wasn't like I was not doing anything. I just wasn't preparing the ground for the next version of me. So I'd had my workout, I'd enjoyed myself. I was just not preparing the way for the next version of me by untying my laces. It's not about starving yourself from things completely all the time, but it is about being slightly more pragmatic. But even, you know, so this living in the moment thing, I often think it's quite problematic because I actually want to experience the best version of the stuff I could do with my spare moments.
Sure.
So I always say to people, you know, why I had kids relatively young, like 28, versus people who are having now at maybe 38, 40 or whatever. And their argument to me is, yeah, but I wanted to have fun. I wanted to enjoy my youth. But actually, I couldn't afford to enjoy youth the same way that I will be able to afford to enjoy being 50. Mm-hmm. So if I was enjoying my youth more, I would have been at a backpackers doing things. And sure, that has a charm. But I would far rather be 50 with my kids growing out of school and you know, be able to travel the world in some degree of style and enjoy the experience.
Sure.
And I sometimes think that we have to consider a little bit about what we actually want. So I was willing to work and hustle a little bit earlier when I was younger so that the later version of me can do cool things or do things cooler. Mm. And it's not that I starved myself from anything. I just kind of planned ahead. Now, of course, the caveat is I could die tomorrow, but that's okay. I don't think I would live with any regrets around that.
Well, one final question on this topic, because I do think it's fascinating, and I think this is definitely the beginning of something very, very interesting. We haven't given much attention to past you. And a lot of people live in the past. They don't live in the future and they don't live in the present. They're very much engaged in stuff that has happened to them and they still carry a lot of anger, frustration, bitterness, resentment, pain, all of those things from the past you. That's also unhealthy, right?
Yeah, for sure. I actually remember reading a book and it was discussing the approach of a lot of psychologists to go and find the root cause of the problem. You know, your father or somebody did something to you and this is what happened. And of course, the Stoics always say as well, and one of whom you quoted earlier, is that you can't control what happened to you, you know, other people's stuff. You can only control your reaction to it. Mm-hmm. And the argument in this book was that it actually gives you very little, that does very little good understanding what happened to the past version of you. It only really matters so in so much as, you know, maybe understanding, okay, this was the reason, but you've almost just got to go, and shrug it off. Having any anger about anything that happened there is simply unhelpful. What you have to look at is how do I move forward? Because again, all you're doing is you're laying the groundwork for future version of you to have a happy life. Now, what we categorically know is that present you cannot impact past you, but can certainly impact future you. And you would spend far more time and it would be far better paid off results if you focused on what you could do for future version of you rather than focusing on what happened to the past version of you.
I can't wait to see where this goes. This is fascinating. I'm not just saying that. We often have interesting talks and you sometimes bring up subjects that are extremely interesting. But today, this is a vein of gold. Keep milking this one.
Thanks so much, dude.
All right,
I will
love
do indeed. Thank you very
all right,
much.
Rich, we'll talk soon.
Cheers,
bye-bye. Cool, there we go. Rich Mulholland. Isn't that nice?
Yeah,
smart guy. I love that.
Smart guy.
And it's little things, like you sit there and you're untying your shoes and you stumble upon a brilliant idea like this.
Mm.
And this is brilliant.
And I think in this way, but on such a small scale compared to the way he's describing it. Like, you know, especially being introduced again to getting up really early in the morning. At night, I find myself saying to myself, be kind to yourself, your tomorrow self, your mm-hmm. tomorrow morning self, by preparing what you want to wear, packing the dishes into the dishwasher, make your tomorrow feel better. It's a tiny scale, but thinking like that feels good.
Have you ever really cool thought, though, about the fact that tomorrow you're this different person?
You are.
Kind of are.
If you think of yourself as three people, and I don't mean you have to be schizophrenic, But if you think about yourself that way and you treat yourself, as you say, kindly, your future self kindly, your future self will be grateful in return to your present self. And therefore, there's this virtuous circle. And I don't want to get too philosophical because it's Monday and people are scratchy and, you know, starting your week out. And there's probably a whole list of stuff you have to do. And there's maybe a bit of pressure because it's November. But if you had to figure out now how much of your daily activity, your time, your energy, your thought goes into your past, your present, and your future self, I think it would be an interesting comparison.
Is that meme? I was trying to search for it now. I mean, it says it way better than I could. But a woman saying, drunk her, left a glass of water next to her bed for the morning, for the sober her. She wakes up thinking, oh, drunk me so kind. She has it and it's vodka. She's like, drunk me's horrible.
All right. That's a wrap on that stuff. Coming up after 8 o'clock this morning, we've got something really interesting. I've been doing this quietly in the background over the last month and a half. I've been to visit Flaxman's attorneys, who are a very impressive law firm in South Africa. It's such an interesting place. And, you know, I could have become a lawyer. I studied law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad for the other lawyers I didn't become a lawyer, because I might have been a really horrible person. I might have been a very horrible lawyer. But I think what's turned out is that I have what's come out in the wash is that I have a huge amount of respect for lawyers. You know, my sister's an advocate. A lot of my friends studied law with me at varsity, still my friends. And I have friends at various places. This law firm is something else. And what do you think it is that makes a law firm? Is it about the size of the building, the size of the ego? You know, you go around Sandton and you see these huge, monstrous skyscrapers that are full of lawyers, and you think, what a place that must be to work in, like suits.
Yeah,
you
know? It's glamorized.
It's about the passion for the law, without a doubt, the knowledge, the understanding, the service that they give to their clients, and that is really what defines a firm like Flaxman's. It's one of South Africa's leading law firms. We wanted to see this for ourselves. So we're very proud to introduce you to a new podcast series called For the Love of Law. Now, the interesting thing about this is we spent about 15 or 20 minutes with each of their lawyers and got to know some of the partners. We haven't finished this project. There are going to be more of these. But if you want to get behind the scenes and behind the desks of some of South Africa's smartest lawyers, you can take a listen to this podcast series. Flaxman's have consistently remained within the country's top six firms, having established a reputation for integrity and service delivery both locally and internationally. Their major strength is the quality of their lawyers, bringing a combination of experience, commitment, and skill. If you'd like to know more, you can go along to cliffcentral.com and you'll see it as a special podcast series. To kick things off, I had a terrific conversation with the longtime senior partner and CEO of Flaxman's, and he's also, by the way, the chairman of Supergroup, Philip Vallett. And he was cited, among other things, in Chambers Global as one of the leading commercial lawyers in South Africa. And he's that and a whole lot more. He leads an important team of lawyers. He's created a culture unlike that of any other firm. Phil gently nudges his brilliant team in the right direction. He's respected by all. His colorful career, his experience is peppered with stories of the good and the great, and funny anecdotes about the practice of law that would make even hardened practitioners knowingly smile. You can hear all of that in my conversation with Philip and with the rest of the lawyers at Flaxman's. Just go to cliffcentral.com if you want to be a part of that. Let's wrap it up with the unnews for this morning, and we will see you tomorrow bright and early. Let's get stuck into the big stories that get everybody's attention on a Monday morning, and today is no exception. You ready for it?
Let me check.
Thanks for checking. The EFF continue to try and divert as much attention away from them and the VBS scandal as possible. Apart from issuing ultimatums to people like Pravin Gordhan, they're also demanding Santa Claus provides his naughty and nice list for review by them by the 1st of December. If there are too many white children on the nice list, his sled may be grounded. Michael Bublé, has been awarded with a star on Hollywood's Walk of Fame. Unveiled this past weekend, it will be dug up again on December the 26th because after Christmas, nobody really cares about the singer until the next festive season. And finally, the All Blacks suffered their second loss of the year. It's really hurt the island nation. After the 16-9 defeat to the Irish on the weekend, many All Blacks fans were even too deflated to beat their wives. we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good day.
CliffCentral.com